Live, local, and unafraid, this is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
820 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon, where through a bit of serendipity, the Cold War meets BuildSubmarines.com. Michael R. Davidson, former CIA operative on the phone. Jack Nugent, BuildSubmarines.com in studio. And Michael, Jack has, a question or comment for you, Jack.
Yeah, Michael. You know, and Tom and I were talking earlier about, I guess we were talking last time I was on the show about, you know, hey, how did we end up here from this point where, we're simultaneously building two different classes of submarine, and, you know, why are we so far behind in submarine manufacturing? And there's a lot of reasons, right? There's the transition to the service-based economy and this go-to-college culture. But another big reason is, you know, we essentially turned off shipbuilding or submarine construction in the U.S. for about 10 years, and I think the catalyst event for that was the ending of the Cold War, right? The Seawolf class was canceled. The Seawolf class submarine, which was really a cutting edge attack submarine that was really expensive, but it was designed to counter the pacing Soviet threats going into the early 1990s, was canceled. And with that, you know, since the 1970s and 80s, I mean, our production of world's commercial ships have gone from 5% to like 0.2% today. Our, you know, decrease in manufacturing workforce, our reduction in public shipyards, our reduction in private nuclear shipyards. But again, the real catalyst for a lot of the slowing down of the submarine construction in the early 1990s was the falling of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union. I'm just, you know, what it must have been like to live through that and you know, be in your position during that and seeing all of the kind of the responses to that.
Michael?
Well, I think a lot of the response was mistaken. You know, the blurb on the cover of my first book, Harry's Rules, was the Cold War did not end. And that's quite true. I think there was a sort of more short period, 1991-92, when after the Soviet Union fell apart, that they were weak. They didn't really know where they were going. But then they went back to their same old status soon enough, and the Russians really never stopped being our enemies. And the Chinese, of course, came on as well. So I really don't know what happened with our defense industries at the time. It seems to me that we just forgot at a policy level, certainly not at a military level, that we were in a fight for survival that continues to this day, is even more dire today than it was back in the 1990s and early 2000s. We've just fallen farther and farther behind. That's due to, I think, poor leadership, poor vision, and maybe some poor choices as heads of the Central Intelligence Agency.
And here we are in 2025, right? We find ourselves in this generational demand on the maritime industrial base. And, I mean, if, you know, the Navy's 2023 Battle Force Ship Assessment requirement calls for 381 ships. We currently have about 300 ships. You know, over half of the ships in the U.S. Navy are over 20 years old. And we must accelerate our shipbuilding programs to support current U.S. maritime security objectives, not just because of Russia, but like you said, China. It's the aircraft carriers, it's the SSBNs, it's the attack submarines, it's our large surface combatants, it's our small surface combatants, it's our amphibs, and then it's our logistics and support ships. And Tom, that's kind of, it's the merchant marine.
That's it exactly. And Michael, I've tried to carry this narrative for years here in the Hudson Valley, all the way from stressing the need for our trades, industrial arts programs in our schools, and always trying to look globally as to what was happening, that how we had trade policies here that were ignoring these national security issues that we've touched on, Michael, in the conversations that you and I have had and that Jack and I have been having. Now, Michael?
Well, it seems to me that we have had a dearth of statesmen.
Yes.
Over the past several years, people with the vision to understand what the world is all about and how it operates and where we need to be in it if we're to maintain our status as the strongest, most prosperous nation on the face of the planet. We've been distracted and we've fallen behind. And it seems to me that our problem is we're always trying to play catch up. You know, we have this, these big elections every 2 years, every 4 years, and depending on who gets into office, policies change and priorities fall by the wayside as one side has different priorities than the other, as opposed to what we used to have back in the 40s and 50s. That I recall was a united front when it came to defense. We no longer have that, and that is quite worrisome given the state of politics in the United States today, where really we have almost diametrically opposed views on the part of both of the major parties.
Yes, and but again, if you just stop and look globally, Michael Davidson, you've spoken to me many times over the years when you talk about Russia, and you have pointed out many times that, you know, Vladimir Putin, once the KGB agent, always the KGB agent.
Yeah, that's true, and you... You know, well, let's look at the Ukraine war, the first land war, major land war in Europe since the end of World War II. This is, clearly a terrible thing. And whose is the major ally of Russia in this effect? You know, we think used to think that Iran was their big ally, supplying them with UAVs and what have you. But as a matter of fact, the major supplier of equipment to the Russians right now to carry on that war is China.
Yes.
And China is doing it almost totally sub rosa via a series of cutout companies. So we're still looking at China and Russia, Russia now being the junior partner in that relationship, still acting as our major opponents on the world stage. And, we made terrible mistakes in the past in allowing China to get into the World Trade Organization to fall for the trick of globalization of economies. And now we're paying the price. And frankly, I hope we can catch up. I hope we have time to catch up before something major really happens. Because we're really, I think, in living in dangerous times. Sailing through very dangerous waters right now, so to speak.
So you mean those cooling units that China was sending to Russia weren't really cooling units, they were instead drone engines?
China is the number one supplier of drone engines to Russia right now, as well as to all all of the other materials which are used to construct drones.
I happened to see that article about 3 o'clock this morning. So, but this is so important. And Michael and Jack Nugent, I would like listeners to know very clearly, knowing both of you, this expression. Peace through strength is not an idle expression. Jack?
No, it's not. And you know, we talk about why the Maritime Industrial Base Program Office is, and the Maritime Industrial Base being strong is so vital to national security. You know, our manufacturing base in the U.S. has atrophied to about a third of what it was just three decades ago, and that makes its revitalization essential for the nation to build and repair ships quickly, adapt to emerging threats, and maintain our competitive edge in global naval power. And that revitalization is critical as it supports the Navy's most significant fleet expansion in decades. You know, by 2028, we talk about the 1+2 mission, but it's also the construction of over 10 different classes of new surface ships like carriers, sure, destroyers, amphibs, like we mentioned earlier.
We're going to have to go out to a break here in a second. You're both welcome to stay on. Michael, I think the idea that the simple expression that weakness begets aggression is appropriate.
Absolutely.
And that's what we've put ourselves in that position, you know, really looking back over the last 30 years. That's why I've spent so much time on, you know, building up the idea that that we need to maintain the industrialized. Michael, are you good to hold through a break for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Michael and Jack, you're good. We'll be back with Michael R. Davis and Jack Nugent in a minute on The Beacon.
He's the voice of the valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
8:34 on this Friday morning on The Beacon. Michael R. Davidson, a former CIA operative and author, on the phone with me. And Jack Nugent, buildsubmarines.com, still in studio. And Michael, the point that you made, your first book, Harry's Rules, The Cold War Did Not End. Boy, I'll tell you what, that really is, if people aren't familiar with your books, it's a good one to start with, because the fact of the matter is, we're living in dangerous times, and the idea that bringing the public on board now, especially young people, with what Jack Nugent is talking about, Michael, all the way from interacting with our education system, K through 12, we're working with our local, trade and technical schools here, to bring a new generation in to build the infrastructure and in this instance, submarines and maritime vessels. It's what we need to be doing, Michael.
Well, absolutely. Our education system has fallen into ruin, basically. If you look at test scores,
yes,
today, I mean, we have kids in eighth grade who still don't know how to read,
yes,
let alone do their math. And that is a terrible problem for the future of the United States. And I can't help but believe that the way we got here was almost purposeful by people who bear us ill will. But I have a question for Jack about maritime technology. I worry about the advance of technology. I worry about whether the ships we're planning to build will be able to survive in a new battle environment that includes swarms of, say, 1,000 drones bearing down on an aircraft carrier that cost billions of dollars to build. What's going on in that area, Jack?
You know, I think from a defense perspective, right, we are always looking at force structure and capabilities of our enemies while we're building out these new ships, right? I mean, I think it's no secret that ship construction is a bit of a balancing act between capability and budget, right? And so, okay, I guess for a submarine example, right, you want to build this submarine that's got all of the defense capabilities and, has the best torpedo defenses and has the best stealth capabilities, but then, okay, you're adding budget but you're also adding weight, and weight's a bad thing on a submarine and weight's a bad thing on an aircraft carrier too. And so it's really about kind of picking and choosing which components, whether it's an extra missile compartment or an extra torpedo tube, or maybe less missile carrying capability to give you more speed and stealth, which components are going to be the most important in the arena and against the adversaries that we think, and again, it's a projection game, but that we think that naval vessel is going to be used for. And we've gotten that right sometimes throughout history, and we've also gotten it wrong throughout history, but I think that's the real challenge that our analysts and the people designing the next class of frigate and destroyer and submarine and aircraft carrier are trying to face.
My take on that, Michael, with what you just said and Jack, I mean, that really points to the fact that why I think buildsubmarines.com is so critical, because they provide, because of their ability to, dive deep and run silent, provides a necessary defense about that. But I think it's a real serious issue that you raise, Michael.
Yeah.
Well, I worry about it because you know what they say about the military. The military is always preparing for the last war. And we need to be preparing for the next war, yes. God forbid it should ever happen. And I agree. Submarines, to me, are really one of probably our most important naval force. Aircraft carriers are great in terms of force projection, I guess, but I think they're vulnerable. I think all service ships are more vulnerable today than they've ever been before, and that makes the submarine. I'm a you know, I, my knowledge compared to Jack's is minuscule. I mean, I'm a complete novice when it comes to naval warfare. But it seems to me that submarines is an area that we certainly should be concentrating on.
It is, and I think that's reflected in the, you know, over the last few years, the defense budget. Submarines are the highest priority and the highest funded line item for the Department of Defense right now. In fact, the Columbia-class submarine year over year continues to be the number one focus of the Department of Defense as far as a procurement standpoint goes, and that's agnostic of administration. You know, and we, you know, we're obviously trying to get this submarine right. It's expected to be launched in 2021, the USS District of Columbia. We're at the second ship of the class, following suit right after that. And that is the, I mean, that's going to be the cornerstone of American strategic deterrence for the next, you know, 40, 50 years. And so, like you said, it's key to make sure that this submarine, you know, has everything from, you know, both an offensive and a defensive capability suite that it needs to. And, you know, that's a challenge that, you know, the government with Electric Boat and all of its sub-tier suppliers are trying to make sure we get right.
This is so such a fascinating thing to talk about. I mean, you think about, we talk about the, you know, electronic, you know, computer chips. Is it possible that these, where these are manufactured, put back doors in there that you can have, you know, a multi-billion dollar vessel that could be crippled by a computer chip that was embedded somewhere that you didn't know? I mean, this is stuff that this sounds like, you know, crazy science fiction stuff, but Michael, this is a reality that we need to be thinking about.
Well, yeah, it's not crazy science fiction stuff. Stuxnet more or less proved that it's not crazy science fiction. And if you recall, we managed to blow up the Russian Siberian gas pipeline several years ago by doing exactly that, implanting a hidden program in the software that the Russians were buying illicitly. So yeah, that's something we need to worry about, and I don't think people quite realize what Trump is trying to do. Trump is literally trying to play catch up and save the United States of America, because he sees us as being in great danger. That's my view. That's why he's rushing to do things after having been crippled in his first administration by what amounted to a soft coup attempt. He's now really got to put the pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
And what I worry about is he only has 4 years to do that, and maybe only 2 years if the Democrats win majorities in Congress and the Senate.
Yes.
So we could be in deep trouble if we don't follow through on these initiatives.
Well, and like I say, I you know, that's why I want to talk about this here, and hopefully other people around the country will understand the fact that, you know, there's lots of, you know, there's billions of good people around the globe, but there's some really, you know, evil still exists, unfortunately. That's what we have to defend against. And so I think what I'll do, Michael, is I appreciate you being able to join this conversation this morning. It's just, to me, it just bridges two generations here, and from a Cold War to where we are today. And I think I'll let you drop off at this point in time, but then you and I can talk about, you know, maybe getting back together next week and really talking about the political aspects and this, you know, soft coup that you just referred to, because I said that, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago that we were witnessing it then. So, Michael, as always, great conversation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Jack, we'll, you know, we'll take a quick break, then you and I can wrap it up this morning.
Good deal.
Back in a minute on The Beacon.
Wake up informed. It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
8:47 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon on this Friday morning. So if you missed hearing me say it at the starting gate this morning, today's July 25th.
Christmas in July.
Christmas in July, and 5 months from today, so people start that Christmas shopping.
Yep.
Exactly. Jack Nugent in studio, buildsubmarines.com. And Jack, I just think it's so serendipitous that Michael was scheduled to be on this morning, and so glad that you and he could both stay on and merge these conversations, because to me there's just something about it, about the years of effort of that Michael put in through the, you know, incredibly dangerous times of the Cold War. And it's, there are new threats today. And he just sent me back. He said, I, you know, took him by surprise. This, you know, maritime, not necessarily his area expertise. He said, I hope I didn't sound too ignorant. No, not at all.
Great.
Not at all. It's just, you know, recognizing the fact that the threats are still there, that they've morphed into something different now. Too many people across the country, I think, are asleep to that fact, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, and it, again, Tom, it's my job to help fight this battle with workforce development in New York State. And I know that sounds like a stretch, but it really isn't.
It's what I've spoken about literally for 35 years. 35 years of the next generation. And it's not just about military. It's about the economic survival of the you know, the next generation who builds and maintains, whether it's in the medical field, that, you know, our pharmaceuticals, our medical research, doesn't matter what it is, our, you know, keeping our food supply safe and secure. It's all interrelated, is how I see it.
Yeah, and you know, just to kind of highlight some of the, you know, the Navy investments that are being made right here in New York State to put skilled workers back into the workforce and support this 1+2 plus surface ship plus sustainment mission. I mean, we've made investments with partners like Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, the USS Intrepid, the Manufacturing Association of Central New York, the Rochester Technology and Manufacturing Association, the Rochester Arc and Flame Center, which is one of the premier welding training centers in New York State, Dream It, Do It Western New York, Say Yes Buffalo, which is a program that helps Buffalo inner city school children kind of get into manufacturing careers. Moog Inc. has built a operations training center in Western New York. Nassau BOCES, we're helping them build out an advanced manufacturing training center, and we're offering scholarships to students on Long Island at Suffolk County Community College. And we continue to find new partners and make new strategic investments throughout the state. And so we really are, you know, both on a national and a state level, you know, trying to do everything we can, whether it's through K-12 efforts or whether it's through, you know, investments that are putting people directly into the workforce and you know, into those companies here in New York State that build parts for ships and submarines.
And
they're all hurting for employees, Tom.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is so critically important. And Jack, I feel so fortunate that through Harold King and Johnny Ann Hansen that I was able to meet you and to continue something that, you know, I've been promoting for years, that, you know, Harold and I have worked together now, I think it's almost 30 years.
And there's a lot more that we can do, the Maritime Industrial Base, with the Council of Industry. And I think we're just getting started with
yes.
them.
Yes. And of course, now interfacing with the Ulster BOCES, with Dr. Jonah Shanker, that we are looking at doing the remote broadcast from the new iPark. You said you've already toured the new iPark.
Yeah, I toured it with Pete Harris.
Uh-huh.
I was introduced to Pete through Marty McGill and the uh-huh. Allendale Machinery folks.
Yep.
You know, Allendale is the Haas factory
Haas,
outlet
yeah.
for like northern New Jersey and,
right.
and the eastern half of New York State. And you know, they have their hands in all sorts.
And
of
what's great? What's great about this? I'm glad you said that, because what's great about this? This is the relationship building. This makes people might not understand this. This
it's
is
a big
the relationship
part of what we do.
Building of why it is so critically important. I mean, you know, you mentioned Pete Harris and Marty McGill and all these folks. They're folks that you know, I've had an opportunity to work with. With Mark Harris, who is
Mark,
with Allendale.
Mark is incredible.
Incredible. His
yeah.
his son now is teaching at the Ulster BOCES over
yeah.
there.
Yeah, funny little full circle moment
and,
there.
And but these listeners, I know I sound like a cheerleader or something. These are the positive things that are happening right here in the Hudson Valley and in other places across the country. that you have counterparts other parts of the country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have folks that are regionally focused in all of the maritime centers of gravity that I mentioned earlier, and then we have other folks on our workforce team that are more like line of effort specific. So we have a gentleman, he's a retired submarine captain. He focuses all on national investments into veterans and transitioning military, right? Huge target audience.
Yes.
We have a woman on our team who's, you know, a career educator, has her PhD in education. She's focused on scaling these educational programs, both upscaling and downscaling, for, you know, K-12 investments. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of her bread and butter. We have another woman on our team who's focused on our national partnerships, so with NASCAR and MLB, and making sure we're kind of getting the most bang for our buck out of those great build submarines national partnerships.
Why is this important to me? Because I've said that you have to understand that this is organic, that you can't just throw money out after a problem.
No, especially taxpayer money.
Taxpayer money. And here, what we're talking about here is we're talking about creating the fertile environment, planting the seeds that in some instances have to be nurtured for years to bring us on board for the future of the entire nation.
Tom, for, you know, through these focused initiatives in attraction and recruitment that the Maritime Industrial Base Program Office workforce team is undertaking, you know, educational programs and K-12 outreach and specialized training and these strategic partnerships, you know, our mission on the workforce team is to create clear pathways for young folks into maritime careers, right? It's a coordinated approach that, you know, we're trying to ensure a robust pipeline of skilled workers ready to support this national critical shipbuilding and maintenance challenge that we talked about throughout this show, while at the same time, right, offering these meaningful, well-paying careers in the maritime industry.
Absolutely. Jack News, you only have about a minute or two left. You went to the Maritime Academy.
I did. Well, I went to SUNY Maritime, which we call the New York Maritime Academy.
Right. And that exists today. And I just wanted to, all of a sudden occurred to me, that's another facet that young people who may have an interest in that to be aware that there is a SUNY Maritime Academy.
There is a critical national need for licensed merchant mariners.
Yes.
Deck and engine officers. And, you know, there's a couple of different maritime academies throughout the U.S. There's Maine Maritime, Mass Maritime, Cal Maritime. There's the Merchant Marine Academy. Obviously, I'm going to plug SUNY Maritime. That's my alma mater.
Sure.
It's the greatest maritime training school
up in Castine, Maine, I think
that's
is
Maine Maritime.
Maritime. I happen to be familiar with that area. And
SUNY is right here in the Bronx. It's under the Throgs Neck Bridge. They just got a brand new training ship. They're the only maritime school to have a brand new training ship right now. And it is gorgeous. I haven't been on it yet, but I've seen plenty of pictures of it, and I've driven over the Throgs Neck Bridge and seen it, and it's a lot nicer than the one that I shipped out on in the early 2010s, I'll tell you that much.
Well, again, you know, we're trying to cover all facets of this, as we say, from, you know, the education to the training to the manufacturing to, you know, as you said, there's a shortage of folks in the maritime industry. So appreciate you coming up, spending a lot of time with us this morning. And I, you know, happy that I was able to introduce you to Michael R. Davidson. And just to me, it added a fascinating part to the conversation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. BuildSubmarines.com.
Safe travels back home. Listeners, have a great, wonderful weekend. Meet me back here Monday morning at 6 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon.